from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies for their entertainment this afternoon. It's Monday, the 12th of September, and this is Game On. Coming up today, we've three Irish success stories to celebrate. First up, Greg Allen and Gary Murphy are back from Wentworth and ready to review Shane Lowry's dramatic success.
So, 17 under par, the roar goes up. Shane Lowry has set the target at 17 under par. Behind him, Rory McIlroy will need to eagle the 18th to match that target. It could and should be an Irish victory. McIlroy's putt's tracking beautifully online. It is absolutely just rested by the hole in an agonising manner for McIlroy. It looked like it was online, about to drop, and that would have made a playoff. But that means that Shane Lowry is the BMW PGA champion.
Also, tones of Greg Allen setting the scene there. We've also got Irish captain Billy Dardis on bronze for Ireland at the Rugby World Cup Sevens.
All pressure there for Ireland, and they hoof it out, and they'll finish in the top three in the world for the first time in a Rugby World Cup since the year 1993. Ireland win the bronze in Cape Town in dramatic fashion. Final score, 19-14, Ireland beat Australia.
And finally, we'll be joined by 23-year-old Kildare jockey David Egan after he won the world's oldest classic yesterday afternoon, the Silent Ledger at Doncaster, at his very first attempt. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Yes, hello there. Good evening. It is great to have your company on this Monday evening. Ruby Walsh, how are you, sir? Did you enjoy the Champions weekend?
I most certainly did. I hope all our listeners were listening to Dermot Weld and back Duke de Sessa. 12-1 he was on Saturday morning after Dermot told us that on Wednesday night. And of course, Shane, Saffron Beach finished in front of Homeless Songs.
I called
unfortunately, it. Unfortunately, you called it.
I called
unfortunately,
it.
Unfortunately, she didn't win either.
No, but still, you know, similar to that Epsom race you refer to. I do listen. I'm learning. Before we chat golf with Greg Allen and Gary Murphy, Ruby, a couple of news headlines to rattle through. Munster's season opener against Cardiff in the URC has been pushed back to Saturday due to Britain's King Charles' visit to the Welsh capital. The game, which was due to take place at Cardiff Arms Park on Friday night, will now kick off at 3:05 on Saturday. A game you can watch live on RT2 and the RTE Player. About 10 minutes before we came on air, the Premier League released a statement on Premier League fixtures this weekend. So 7 of the 10 Premier League fixtures this weekend will be played, with 3 matches postponed due to the events surrounding the Queen of Britain's funeral. Matches postponed on Sunday are Chelsea against Liverpool and Manchester United at home to Leeds, and Brighton against Crystal Palace is also off. So there's a full revised fixture list on the Premier League website with televised matches. There's a couple of matches on Friday evening and so on so forth. Sticking with soccer, good news for Ireland, because Andy Robertson looks highly likely to miss Scotland's UEFA Nations League clash with the Republic of Ireland on Saturday week after sustaining a knee injury in their defeat to Napoli in the Champions League. And finally, some bad news from F1 actually, because driver Alex Albon suffered a respiratory failure and was left on a ventilator following complications from surgery. Albon was ruled out of the Italian Grand Prix in Monza with appendicitis on Saturday morning before being transferred to nearby San Gerardo Hospital for treatment. The Williams driver underwent surgery but then ended up in intensive care after he required assistance breathing. Well, Williams say Albon was removed from mechanical ventilation yesterday but is expected to remain in hospital for the foreseeable. So obviously we send our best wishes to Alex Albon there. Some bad news from the F1. So Shane, obviously there will be I'd say more fixtures and more postponing of events and whatnot. Arsenal's match in Europa League, Ruby, is off, whereas Liverpool's and Chelsea's goes ahead. Rangers, Napoli is off as well. So bit of a mixed bag. Oh, but Ruby, it's all about golf.
It is about golf. When you think about the size of the events that will take place in the UK in the next week, there will be huge pressure on security, and they will all be taken away from football matches, and priority will go elsewhere, Shane. I'm afraid that is life.
Yeah, I think that's to note. It's policing issues. That's the main
biggest thing. Yeah,
yeah. The bring because the Premier in their Premier League statement, they noted following extensive consultation with clubs, police, local safety advisory groups, and other relevant authorities, there was no other option but to postpone the 3 fixtures, as I mentioned there: Chelsea, Liverpool, United, Leeds, and Brighton Palace.
C'est la vie.
C'est la vie. C'est la vie. Indeed. However, Gary Murphy joins us, as does Greg Allen, who has managed to come back. Thank God you weren't flying on Saturday, Greg. Would have been carnage getting back to the airport.
Yeah, fortunately, tournaments finish on Sunday.
So yeah, you dodged the bullet.
Even
there.
The 54 hole ones finish on a Sunday, Shane.
Even the shotgun starts. But listen, Shane Lowry is hopeful that his victory at the BMW PGA Championship will spur him on to more success, Greg, more regularly on the tour. The Offaly man emerged victorious at the prestigious Wentworth tournament, beating fellow major winners Rory McIlroy and John Rahm by a single shot to claim a sixth European title as a professional and end a 3-year wait for a win since earning the 2019 Open Championship. Will this victory spur him on, Greg?
He's had a great year, and it hasn't been as good in the last few months as it was early on in the year, but at the early part of the year he was second in the Honda Classic, got very unlucky when the rain came down on the 18th. He had a 2-shot lead with 5 holes to play. He didn't get that across the line. Sepp Straka birdied 3 of the last 6 holes, a very difficult stretch on the Honda Classic, so to some degree Shane didn't lose it as much as it was taken from him. He had a great chance as well in the Heritage, finished 3rd there. Finished 3rd in the Masters, but he ran into that 3rd. That was a very good 3rd. So he was playing really, really consistently. And the middle of the season was good, just wasn't as good as it was early in the season. Like, his last top 10 finish actually was the Irish Open in early July before yesterday. So what's interesting is that he took 2 weeks off after the end of the BMW Championship on the FedEx series. So he didn't hardly touch his clubs and came out and he wins a tournament. So, you know, there might be a lesson to be learned that, you know, sometimes the drudgery of the year, you get into a particular cycle of playing well, but not well enough to win. Take a couple of weeks off, system reboots, you come out and you play 54 holes, as it turned out to be, for very good reasons, because of the death of Queen Elizabeth II. 54 holes without a bogey. Like, that's an astonishing achievement. Doesn't matter that the course is playing quite easy. It's an astonishing achievement. Tree-lined golf course like Wentworth, to cover it in not a single bogey, that in itself was impressive. So what do we kind of gain from watching the way that Shane won? A maturity in his ability to cope with very, very stressful, difficult situations, which he's always been pretty good at, but sometimes Shane gets really, really tight and antsy on the course. His caddy, Brian Martin, who Gary knows very, very well, Gary Murphy, I'll let him speak more about Brian and Bo, as of course he's known. You know, he was in his ear all on the back nine yesterday. It was the Portrush rap. You know, it was all over again. It was Shane, you know, keep him loose, you know, stop him from getting antsy. And Bo is great at that. Bo's just a real proper member of the human race, as well as being a great caddy and a good golfer. So I think that was hugely important. And after the event, Shane actually paid tribute to Bo and saying that, like, you know, there's been times this year when it looks as though Shane has been pretty hard on Bo out on the golf course, and there have been quite a few documented sort of, you know, vignettes that we've seen. But he said it's great to win with a friend on the bag. And, like, that's really part of it. Like, when they're coming down the stretch, it's not, you know, master and pupil, it's not employer and you know, employee. It's two friends who know that it's a team that's going across the line together. And I just thought that the way he executed it was astonishingly good, because he got a very ordinary start, had to make par from 40 yards beneath the hill at the bottom of the green in the first, having hit his drive into trees. And I think that if he hadn't got up and down from the first, that it might not have happened, because there are certain things you do on a day when everybody's making birdies, and one of them is not make bogey. And making bogey in the first hole when he was already 4 shots off the lead. And I think if he'd made bogey, he would have gone out to tied for 25th place. So that's how far back he would have been. But he didn't. He made par. Eagle the 4th. Great eagle, as we know. And then started making the birdies. The 7th, the 8th, the 10th, the 12th. Suddenly he's tied for the lead. But then you've got to finish it off. And knowing that the 18th is really a short par 5 and maybe a long par 4, whatever way you want to put it, you still got to hit 2 great shots because it's tight. And he hit 2 great shots. Probably the best 5-iron of his life, or close to it, to hit that green. Amazing when he hit the shot. He almost turned away straight away because he knew it was a great shot. So under the ultimate pressure, he played the shot when it counted. And that's got to be good going forward for the rest of his career. A long way of answering your question.
Absolutely, no, but some really, really good insight. Ruby, I know you have a question for Gary, but before we continue the conversation, Greg, as I mentioned, you were over at Wentworth, and after the competition, you caught up with Shane Lowry.
I went out there against a couple of the best golfers in the world today, and I showed how good I can play the game, and how good I really am. So I can do nothing only take confidence from this. I'm proud of the way myself and Bo handle it out there. To play a tournament around Wentworth with no bogeys is fairly good, to be honest. And I'm just kind of, I'm just so happy. I'm just like, I feel like the Open was a long time ago, and to win again is great, but to win a tournament this magnitude is even better.
Yeah, because it is 3 years since you've won, and this is something that you have to do to kick on from a major championship. And it's not just any title; it's the BMW PGA, one of the biggest titles that there is on your schedule.
Yeah, it's certainly one. It's definitely in the top handful, top six or seven tournaments at the start of the year that you're looking at that you want to win, and I managed to do it. So yeah, look, I'm over the moon. I'm so happy. I can't wait to get home and see the kids. I can't wait to get home and see Wendy. Poor old Wendy's on a flight to Charlotte at the minute. She missed her with everything that went on yesterday. Her flights were cancelled and all, and she's had a rough few days, and I just can't wait to get home and celebrate with them, to be honest.
Every single shot out there, you got a little bit antsy at times, but as you have to when you're under pressure, but you seemed in control, and Bo was in your ear the whole time.
Bo was great today, and I was quite, I was a bit edgy out there, but I talked to him about it, and he was pretty good, and I actually thought it was after holding that putt in the last, and he gave me the same words of wisdom he gave me in the 18th at Whiston Straits, which was funny enough, and that was pretty cool. And it's just great. It's great for him as well. We've had a great year, and we've had our ups and downs, and we've had our falling outs, but to win with a good friend on the bag is extra special as well.
And with the win comes a bag full of Ryder Cup points.
Yeah, that went through my head out there today as well. Like, it's amazing what goes through your head when you're out there walking on your own. And the Ryder Cup points, it's a great start, isn't it? Look, I want to be front and centre on that team, and I want to go to Rome and help the lads win the trophy back. So, that's one of my main goals for the next 12 months, and it's a great start this week.
You're quite cogent right now, but this is going to sink in, isn't it, as being a really big day in your life?
Ah, yeah, look, I'm 35. I still feel like I have a lot of good golf left in me, but you don't know what's around the corner. You just have to soak these moments in. This is, my sixth win on tour, which is starting to creep up to a nice number, and it's starting to become a nice career. And I'm over the moon. I'd love to. I don't know what to say, to be honest. I'm just so happy right now. Cheers, Greg.
Gary Murphy, he says, is starting to become a nice career. That's what was wrong with it up to now.
Yeah. He's a bit hard on himself there, isn't he? No, I think, for all these top players, it's all about the wins. Rory's in his 20s, of the current crop, like Dustin Johnson has won, terms, Tiger doesn't matter, like he's no yardstick for anyone. But, double figures is, a milestone that someone like Shane should be hoping for pretty quickly, even though he's won his WGC. He's won a major championship. He's won two Rolex events. You could probably class an Irish Open as an amateur, almost as a major, because it completely transformed his sporting life. But yeah, he'll still be a little disappointed with only having six wins on tour. And that's because he's such a good player. And, he proved that yesterday. And as well as he played, and as unbelievable as that second shot was into the last, it was only to win by one, and obviously McIlroy was a whisker away. So the other side of that coin is it just shows you how difficult it is to win these big championships. He played perfect golf, didn't drop a shot in 54 holes, and yet had to hit a phenomenal shot on the last and two putt for birdie just to win by the skin of his teeth. So it's just not easy to win these things. It's 3 years since his last victory. He's had his best ever season on the PGA Tour. When he won the Open in 2019, I think he was 33rd. He was 31st this year, very unlucky to miss out. Because the last couple of events of the FedEx are a little tough. They're weighted very heavily. So he went into those playoffs, I think, in 24th. So it was a difficult to kind of stay in there because guys come from nowhere to jump past you. But he's just been so solid this year. And he didn't really start his PGA Tour season until, Honda, which is almost the middle of February. So that might be something that he looks at next year, schedule-wise, to maybe play a little bit more in the States and see, come back to Europe for the big ones. But he's in a great place in his career at the moment. And, it's always that bit more fun when Shane wins and you see that big bright smile, which you'd like to see a little more often, because when he kind of gets out of his own way, he's, you know, in my opinion, he's a comfortable top 10 player in the world.
Craig, I had what I consider to be the privilege of playing in the Pro-Am in Wentworth with him 12 months ago when he was trying to play his way into the Ryder Cup team. And to watch him, he must have told the people we were playing with 15 times how much he loves Wentworth and how much he likes playing there. And that course seems to suit him. Even his mentality, the way he looks at it, he just loves being in Wentworth.
Can I be Ruby Walsh for a while? I'd like to get those invitations, you know that.
Funny enough,
time yet,
we didn't get invited back.
I have to keep remembering I'm talking to a legend here, you know. keep it down, Greg. Ruby, the Wentworth is his playground. It's probably his favourite course to score on. I'm not sure if it's his favourite course in the entire world, but he plays so well around Wentworth. I'm not sure, I haven't got the stat in front of me, but he's top 10 there almost every second year in the last 10 years. And he was second to Rory back in 2014, when in actual fact, he was leading coming to the 13th, and he double bogeyed the 13th. He tangled with the bushes on the left-hand side. And Rory came with a rush at the end and pipped him. And Shane actually did well to finish outright second back in 2014. I think he holed about a 55-foot putt on the final green to get outright second. But, you know, there was this thing yesterday, you know, where, you know, clearly Rory likes Wentworth, especially in September, because it's softer in September and Rory does like softer courses, even though he performs on firmer courses probably better now than he ever did. But Shane just loves Wentworth. And when he gets there, it's like he's got his Superman outfit on. And it's he feels that no matter who's in the field, that he can beat them. So that helps, because I think Gary will testify to this. There are some courses that you just feel very comfortable on, and Wentworth for Shane is one of them. And the idea that you make not a single bogey in 54 holes on a tree-lined course like that, albeit which is playing quite easy because it's so soft. And it's no longer a long course for these guys, Wentworth. It used to be. It's no longer with the distance that they hit it. But the fact is that he loves Wentworth, and every time he goes there, he feels he can win. And this time he did. And I think it's very important that he's got this win at Wentworth, because before the tournament, he spoke to me in the preview and I was asking him, you know, what is it about this place? He says, well, firstly, it's the size of the title. I love the idea of having my name on that trophy with all the great winners. Well, some great winners indeed, like Rory McIlroy and indeed Harry Bradshaw back in 1958. So it's a really, you know, good vibe for him to play in Wentworth. So every time he tees it up there, he feels he's going to win or be in contention. And this time he executed it with joint second place occupied by Rory McIlroy and John Rahm. So it was a pretty very satisfying victory in that respect.
Gary, we've heard of the importance of Bo on the bag for him and the ups and downs they've had through the season. My imagination of what a good caddy would be is someone that's telling you where you're wrong, not always where you're right. And if there's not a bit of aggro every now and then between player and caddy, well, sure, it could be anyone carrying your bag telling you you're a hero. You do need people at times to tell you what you're doing wrong. And obviously, Bo is good at that.
Oh, you do. I don't mind the aggro. The aggro's, you know, it's like you having a row with Willie Mullins over a horse. You know what I mean?
There has to be there, doesn't it?
It's just business. Like, there's no, I think a lot of the stuff with Shane and Bo is blown out of proportion, really. It's, you know, players all day, every day, roaring and shouting at caddies. It's only venting. It's only, you know, it's to make sure that it's constructive and it's not detrimental to the player's performance. That's the most important thing. The caddies have thick skins. They're well used to it. And, you know, I think if you did a poll on all the caddies, they'd rather, you know, their players, you know, showing that he cares as such. You know, you'll get it. There's a big thing or a new thing going on at the moment about not showing any emotion and the process and all that sort of stuff. But golf is a very emotive game, you know, and it can, and you need luck, and it can just turn and change in the blink of an eye. And Shane is hard on his sleeve guy, and Bo is really calm. And I think, you know, they're both really good for one another. I think it was this week was their fourth season together, you know, and that is a long relationship. I think a couple of years is a long relationship, really. But so 4 years, you know, they're well down the track. They've had a lot of success. This is their third massive win. Obviously, Abu Dhabi was the kickstart, and then Portrush just goes down in history. But this is another huge win. you know, and Bo's been around the block nearly, 20 years almost out caddying on tour now, so he knows the game inside out. And he knows how to handle people. His kind of previous life was in sales, so, you know, he's well able to read people, and I think himself and Shane make a wonderful partnership. And, you know, it's just getting over the line is the big difference. You know, Rory can, you know, slide that thing in and he loses in the playoff. And so the line is so fine. And, you know, it's easy to kind of be geniuses after he's won the thing. But this has been, you know, looking like happening all season. And it's just nice that it kind of kickstarts the tail end of a season. And as Greg said to him, you know, the Ryder Cup points is huge. It's a want for him to get on the team now. He's not really hoping it. So he's sticking his chest out. He's trying to carry the can for the DP World Tour, which is a big mantle, as we saw with Rory in the States. So, and maybe that inspired him a little bit, because the atmosphere was, you know, a little bit toxic last week with certain players. So to back that up with the performance was brilliant. But I think they're a great team, and long may it continue.
As much as the four of us here are delighted for Shane Lowry, I think Luke Donald will be a very happy man when you look at that top three finish with Shane Lowry, Rory McIlroy and John Rahm. I suppose, Greg, just following up on that Ryder Cup, how much would that be at the forefront of Shane's mind now in terms of targeting Rome for a good showing?
Yeah, I think the fact that he had to rely on a wild card, and he didn't really, you know, I mean, obviously he enjoyed his Ryder Cup, but he would so much have preferred to have been an automatic qualifier. And to some degree, he felt he may have had to prove something being a wild card. But for your second Ryder Cup, having got a wild card for your first, you want to qualify and be one of the power players on the team. And, you know, this is the Shane Lowry that he expects to be on the team next year, one of the top four, top five on that team, puffing his chest out and saying, look, I'm one of the world's best players. He is now, by the way, the world number 19. I think his highest world ranking was 17, close to after winning the Open Championship in 2019. So 19 in the world, he is in that territory of being one of Europe's top players if he makes the team. Look, it's a long way to Rome. It's a long way to the end of the qualification process, 11 and a half months. And I think that Shane will have to obviously pick up more points than he has picked up in this particular tournament. But, you know, there are only 6 automatic spots because Luke Donald has 6 wild cards. So to pick up one of those automatic positions means straight away that you're one of the big guys on the team. And Shane wants to be that leader, because you saw the way in Whistling Straits, the way that he faced up to a very adversarial atmosphere by just, you know, bringing out the best in him. And, you know, and just going back on what Gary was saying there about, you know, the tensions that, you know, accumulated during a golf tournament. And yes, Shane has been, you know, with Bo quite tense at times, and we've seen the interludes, which weren't easy to look at. But, you know, people start thinking from the comfort of their armchair at home, or even if they're outside the ropes, you know, they're not in there. They're not in the high intensity cauldron of the sport being played. You can't make a value judgment on that unless you're absolutely aware of what's on the line, what's going through the player's mind. Is he doubting himself about some aspect of his game? Is he, you know, and thereby, you know, attention walking with your caddy for 4.5 to 5 hours, just the two of you, it's very difficult to keep a lid on emotions. And people make the judgment on, you know, something that Shane may have said to, you know, his caddy, or even vice versa. I'm not saying that ever happened, but you can't really place yourself in that situation. And unless you're actually in that situation. And what I loved about the Ryder Cup last year was Shane thrived in the adversarial situation that he was in terms of the crowd baying against Europe. And I think he wants to be one of Europe's strongmen going out there next year in Rome and leading, rather than being, you know, a wild card of whom good things are expected, but not great things. He wants to produce great things and be a leader for Europe.
Well, he's certainly on course for being a leader for Europe. We nearly did have an All-Irish playoff. And Gary, I want to get your thoughts on how Rory McIlroy may be reflecting on this tournament. But before we hear from Gary, we can hear from Rory McIlroy, who Greg was also chatting to.
I think Shane winning softens the blow. If it had been someone else, I mightn't have felt as comfortable with it as I am. But seeing a friend win is always great. I'm really happy for him. So, look, I struggled today. I didn't hit my irons very well. I was sort of scrambling quite a lot. But I got the most out of my round. You know, I wish I had a mid-4 on 17, but apart from that, sort of dug in there and did what I needed to do to give myself a chance going down 18. Wasn't meant to be. I thought the putt on the last was in, just sort of wiggled right on me at the end. But overall, another good week. I mean, I keep putting myself in these positions and, that's all you can ask for.
68, 65, 67. Gary, he can hardly complain too much.
No, he's in a sweet spot at the moment, Ruby. I followed him for most of his rounds, really, and I just wish I could drive the ball like that for about 5 minutes, never mind 4 days. But yeah, everything is kind of right in the world for McIlroy at the moment. And as he said, he didn't kind of have his best stuff, but you know, he's still there. I mean, like, there was a lot of people, there was a lot of chat about his putt on 18, but the putt on 17 was just as good. So I think he hit both his lines for those two putts, and that's all you can do in that pressurised environment. I think he'll be happy, you know, and it's great to see him playing the Italian Open this week. I think that's huge for the tour. There's been a lot of chat about protecting the PGA Tour, but when, you know, Rory is back and Matt Fitzpatrick's going to be in Italy as well, that's a big help for the tournament. And I think Jon Rahm is going to be in Spain next month, so, you know, great to see those guys coming back and playing a little bit more. But no, it's been a great year for McIlroy, and he'll obviously try to finish it off. I think he's possibly playing Dunhill Links and then the DP World Tour Championship. So he's in line to yet again win the money list. And it's been a great year for him. Obviously, the major is a disappointment, but outside of the majors, he's probably been the best player in the world.
He most certainly has. Craig Allen, before we wrap it up, as an Irishman standing on the 18th in Wentworth yesterday with Shane Lowry in the clubhouse and Rory McIlroy hitting onto the green, did you think you'd see glory days like that in golf, an Irish domination like that?
Yeah, I think actually it's a really good point. I was highly aware of it, as it was only the point when Rory's putt on 18, and it was roughly from the same place as Shane putted from, and when it was on his way, I'm thinking, gosh, this putt is for a playoff, you know, Rory and Shane going into a playoff for one of the biggest titles, certainly the biggest title on the DP World Tour in terms of events that they run. Yeah, it was a great moment. And I was certain, I could see you about 2 feet from the hole, that the ball is definitely going to get there. And it was tracking online, but as so often happens when the ball loses pace, it just goes a tiny bit offline. And it was just such a beautiful putt, and it could easily have gone in. And there was Rory, not playing all that well in the first round, not playing all that well in the final round. He did play well in the 65 in the middle. And he's one roll of a ball, half a roll of a ball, from making it a playoff between two Irishmen. It would have been wonderful. Not wonderful for Shane. I think Shane felt he had done enough. He didn't want to see anything happening that was going to create any more drama than he had already created himself. But it was, yeah, it was great, Ruby. And I was highly aware of it as the ball was running at the hole, and I'm, you know, 15 or 20 feet away just at the back of the green, and thinking, this is one of those moments. And it's not even a major. And we've had 10 majors to celebrate from Irish players in the last 15 years. This is the most extraordinary era in Irish golf. And Leona Maguire, fourth in the Women's British Open just a few weeks ago, eighth in the US Open. You know, like, we've got something going on at the moment which we should really appreciate while we have it, because it is truly wonderful.
Absolutely, it is. And as Paul from Sligo texts in, I think Padraig Harrington deserves a mention after another big seniors win at the weekend. Indeed he does. His excellent PGA Tour Championship season continued with victory at the Ascension Charity Classic in St. Louis. The 51-year-old shot his highest round of the week yesterday, a 68, but was still able to pick up the victory by one stroke. Harrington's previous 12 starts had brought 2 wins, 4 second place finishes and another 2 top 10s. And now he has another trophy to add to his collection. So certainly life in the old dog yet. I'd love to get Greg Allen and Gary Murphy's thoughts on that, but unfortunately time is against us, because Ruby, we are going to be turning our attention to rugby in the company of Billy Dardis, Irish Sevens captain, in a few moments time. So stick with us here in Game On.
Game On
Rugby.
Now time to turn our attention to rugby, and I'm delighted to say that Ireland captain Billy Dardis joins us now following Ireland's brilliant Rugby Sevens World Cup third place finish, equaling their best ever finish at a World Cup. Billy, thanks so much for taking the call. I know it hasn't been that long since the end of the tournament. You're still waiting to fly home from South Africa as we chat now, but what's been the overriding emotion securing that third place finish in such a competitive World Cup?
Yeah, it's pretty surreal, really. I suppose it kind of just all happened last night. Like, it's been a long enough weekend. We played Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and yeah, it was a long weekend. We managed to beat South Africa on their home patch, there on Saturday night. It was a late one, 10:30 at night in South Africa. So had our semi-final against New Zealand on Sunday morning, which was tough to back up a big performance against South Africa. But to come away with a bronze medal in a World Cup is pretty special. And I suppose it's probably a fair reflection of how we've gone this year, with the momentum we've built, the teams we've beaten, and just a really incredible experience and a special night for us as a team and as a program.
You mentioned a quick turnarounds. I mean, how challenging was it trying to reset both physically and indeed mentally in such a short period of time? Because you had that narrow semi-final loss to New Zealand not long then before regrouping and securing that superb 19-14 win over Australia.
Yeah, it was actually quite long in sevens terms. We had about 5 or 6 hours, which it's not too long for some people, but I suppose there was enough time for us to kind of have a bit of a moan, a sulk, and kind of be annoyed with things, but then also refresh and get ready for a big game against Australia. Like, yeah, it was very disappointing to lose to New Zealand, and the manner in which we did. I think we weren't in the game from the start, let in 2 easy tries, and then we were just chasing our tails a little bit towards the end of the game. So that was disappointing, but as soon as we kind of got over that, the thought of like achieving or winning a medal at a World Cup kind of overcame everything, and the guys, like, they just came out, and I suppose it was just one last big effort to make something or do something that we'd remember for the rest of our lives. And it was incredible. The atmosphere in the stadium was electric, and to win the game in the manner that we did in the last few moments was really, really cool. So it was a great night for all of us.
Billy, there's 24 men's teams, 16 women teams, all playing on Sunday. So he loses semi-final. Where do you go to regroup? I mean, I can't imagine everyone has their own dressing room. Do you just go and sit in the sand and have a moan and a chat? Or what was the setup?
No, it's so we're actually only five. The hotel was 5 minutes away from the stadium. So because there's such long gaps in between the games, after each game, we just have a bit of a nice bath there and then try and get on the bus within 20 minutes after the final whistle. Head back. Most of us went for a bit of a nap for an hour or two, and then went for a swim in the pool, try and freshen up, and then you start prepping for the game again. You get to what we watched Australia, went back to the stadium, and just get ready to go again. It's a bit of a bizarre kind of environment, the sevens kind of tournaments. They're very strange, they're very different. All the teams are in the same hotel. You should be travelling to the stadium on the same bus as the team you're playing. It really is mental, but I suppose it's all part of the challenge and the fun that is the Sevens World Series, and this World Cup with 40 teams in the one hotel. It was like a jungle last night afterwards, but great fun all the same.
I can imagine it was. I'd say it was great crack last night. But did you actually head from the hotel to the stadium with the Australians before you beat them for a medal?
No. In the past, we've sat in the same dressing room as the team that we're playing, but no, we're fortunate enough to have our own vans for these 2 weeks. But it can be strange enough. But I think the stadium was big enough that every team had a dressing room. Each team has a dressing room underneath the stadium in the car park. And the South Africans had their own home dressing room. And it was pretty well run. It's a massive operation, and I think there was over 170 or 180,000 people there over the weekend. So it was just, the place was rocking, and it really does feel like it's all happening around you. And I think that's part of the challenge with sevens as well, is when there's a big party going on around you, being able to focus the mind and perform the way the players do perform, it really is incredible.
Well, trying to focus the mind, Billy, I know you went behind against Australia and you had to fight back on a couple of occasions. You know, as a leader of the team, what was the message to the guys when you were chasing the game on the field?
It didn't really feel like we were chasing it, really, to be honest with you. We were pretty in the game. Like, Australia, we played Australia a lot through the years, and if you allow them early momentum and give them kind of tries early in the game, they really get their tails up and they can put a cricket score on you. They really can rack up 20, 30 points pretty quickly. So we knew if we just got into the fight and stayed in the fight for the first half, that we were well within a chance, because we're pretty good. Like, we're a very fit team, so when it comes to second half, we're quite strong. We usually score a lot of points. So I think we went into the break pretty neck and neck with them. They had made a few mistakes, and we had got one or two tries, and yeah, there was no real different messages other than the usual, just keep doing what you're doing, keep hunting on the inside, keep talking, stay connected, and just, we usually talk about, let it, like, like attack will look after itself. We know we're really good attackers, but we have to work in defence, work really hard, especially in sevens. It's tough going when you're defending, so like seven men are defending a whole pitch. It's pretty tough going. So we knew if we could kind of contain them in defence and try and win the ball back, we knew we were good enough to take our opportunities. And I suppose when you have guys like Kerry Kennedy on the pitch or Jordan Conroy, and then even the bigger lads like Jack Kelly and Harry McNulty, that, you know, when we get the ball, we can do something. And I think it was incredible the way the lads finished the game off, scoring off of Roche, throwing the ball to Harry. It was just, it sent the crowd and us berserk. It really was pretty cool.
There's star names all over the pitch, and you mentioned that defensive work rate and indeed seeing out games. What's been key to the team's success throughout this World Cup campaign?
Yeah, I think it's just been a kind of a self-belief. I think we all know how good we are, and I think when it comes to the weekends and the World Series, I think things might not click, and just even the smallest things, like if you're not winning your kickoffs or if you're making little silly mistakes, it really can cost you, and teams just rip you to shreds if you give them good access into a game. So we knew if we could do all the little simple things really well, that we could, we know we're more than capable of beating the best teams in the world. Like, we've beaten South Africa, Fiji this year. Like, we've beaten all the best teams in the world. The only team we haven't beaten is New Zealand, and we're so close to doing that. I think we've been within a score of beating them on the last three occasions. So we're right there. We're right in it. But I think really this weekend we were right on it. Everyone was so motivated. Everyone was driving it. And it really was player driven. The old guys in the squad and the senior leaders in the squad were really driving it. And it was a really memorable weekend. It'll be another one to go down to the books. We've been lucky enough to have some really great weekends with the sevens, whether it was qualifying for the World Series in Hong Kong back in 2019, or qualifying for the Olympics last summer, or the last World Cup back in San Francisco in 2018. They're just all great memories, and this winning a bronze medal at a World Cup, I suppose it's right up there. So it certainly was a weekend to remember.
And that's something that'll never ever be taken away from you. But you say you were right on it this weekend. How did you get more on it this weekend? Did you go earlier? Was training a bit different? What was the difference? Or can you put your finger on the difference?
I don't know if you can put your finger on it. I think, like, we kind of essentially play a World Cup twice a month, every month. Like, our season is, like, the Sevens World Series is the 16 teams or nations travel around the world together, playing these all the most glamorous locations, and you're playing a World Cup every weekend. So it wasn't too different, only but for the format, the knockout format, and the additional kind of the extra eight teams to make up the 24. So it's no different, but then I think just that World Cup tag just adds that bit of pressure and hype. And it only, I think us as a team, we actually perform quite well under pressure. There's something in the team that when it comes to high pressure situations, and there was a lot of them this weekend, and we've experienced a lot of it through the years, that guys are able to just stay calm. The best players in the world we've seen on the World Series are the players that when the pressure is on, everyone's extremely fatigued, that you're composed enough and fit enough and kind of smart enough to make the best decisions under that fatigue. And that comes down to, like, setting early first, like having a look up, doing the simple things really well, whether it's communicating. And I think just this weekend, everyone was right on us. And yeah, I think when it came to that, like the early games in the weekend, whether it was Portugal or England, like we knew we could go out there and beat them. It was just a case of going out there and executing. When it came to South Africa, we were playing South Africa at home. We're in front of 60,000, so it's not very hard to get up for that one and get very energised. And then New Zealand, the exact same. So I think it's just, it was a case of just that extra bit of focus, that extra bit of drive. And yeah, it was incredible. The guys were just insane this weekend. The way they kind of led and drove it. And I think the fifth game of the weekend after three long, hard days to go out and perform like the way they did was, it really was pretty special and made for a really memorable night in Sevens rugby in Ireland.
An absolutely memorable night and indeed memorable tournament. A bigger picture, Billy, I mean, you mentioned the 2018 World Cup there, so that was a 9th place finish, which was the highest finish of any non-core World Series team. Then you gained core status in 2019, and now you've got that 3rd place finish in the World Cup. What's driven that steady progress as a whole?
Yeah, there's a lot. I think there's a lot of factors in it. I think, firstly, I suppose you can look at, like, the RFU have been brilliant in supporting it. And the people around the Sevens program, the likes of Dave and his four, Anthony Eddy, James Toppings, they've all been brilliant in supporting it and pushing it. And then you have the kind of support staff within that. But then the players that we've had throughout the years, this core, like we always kind of talk about this core group of guys, the 7 to 10 lads that have stuck around for the last 5 or 6 years, we've all gained a lot of experience. We've had some good days and some hard days. But we all now, like, we've turned this into a world-class program. We're turning it, like, you sprinkle in a bit of talent from the academies, the provincial academies, and that just adds that energy and that buzz. But you have a group of guys there who are extremely motivated, have a lot of experience, and they're driving standards both on and off the pitch. And it's just made for a great environment, something that I think the RFU are now really, like, proud of. It's a well-respected program within Irish rugby, and I really do think it's just going to continue getting better because the support from the RFU is only getting better. I think they've recognised how good of a program this is, and I think that, like, from here, like, this is a stepping stone, I think, in Irish sevens, and I think a medal at the next Olympics is kind of the next thing on the horizon, is something that we'll aim for. I think we have a busy year this year trying to qualify for the next Olympics, but I really do think after the last 5-6 years, the trajectory that we're on, it's only up from here, I think, and I hope.
That's such a positive mindset change, really, if you're aiming for Olympic medals. And you mentioned the coaches there. So James Topping, I suppose, it's probably fair to say he's built on the foundation laid by Anthony Eddy in a relatively short space of time. And there's been plenty of notable moments in that short space of time. World Series final, silver medal in Toulouse, and now this 3rd place finish and a bronze medal at a World Cup. Was that a seamless transition in coaching, or what has been the big differences?
Yeah, a little bit. Toppers was around with us for the last 5 or 6 years. He was more of an assistant coach, and he took a bit of a backseat through that because Ant was driving everything. Ant had all the experience and really led the team, and he was brilliant in kind of giving us that foundation in sevens, because the sevens is unknown in Ireland. No one really knows how to play it, and he had to teach a group of guys how to play sevens, because it is ultimately a different sport as well. It feels, it certainly for 15 guys going across, it is very different. But Toppers then, I suppose, when Ant left, nothing changed too much. I suppose we had to, as a kind of senior leadership group, had to take a bit more control and just make sure that was as seamless a transition as possible. And I think we did quite a good job. Toppers is completely different to Anthony, though. Ant was quite, he had a certain coaching style. He told you what to do, you had certain expectations, and you always did your best to meet the kind of those KPIs around the game. It was always around meeting our kind of green lights, whether it was our tackle percentages or our turnovers or our penalties, that kind of thing. Whereas Toppers is more, he's allowing us to kind of drive things as a squad, and it's just, it's been really enjoyable. Because it was great with Ant, and we had some great times, and now it's brilliant that, like, Toppers has had such success. A lot of success in a short space of time. He's been brilliant, and I think he's really enjoying now taking us around the world, and hopefully these results will continue. I'm sure, like, every team has their down days and their good days, so I'm sure at some point in the future we'll come up against certain roadblocks, but I suppose you have to deal with that when it comes. But for the moment, it's been pretty good under Toppers, to be fair.
Mentioning pretty good and enjoyable all in the one sentence, Billy, Shane Lowry posted a picture of himself this morning at 7:30 having a cup of coffee, alluding to the fact that he probably had a pretty enjoyable night somewhere in London or on the outskirts of London. Did you have as good a night in Cape Town?
We had a good night. Yeah, absolutely. We I think it was pretty surreal after the final whistle. We were all dancing around the pitch, and then I think, like all good Irish people, it was a case of just going in and sitting in the dressing room, and everyone sitting around in a circle, just having a beer, having a bit of a song and a dance, and it was just good crack. We all sat around for a good hour or two, and there's no better feeling when you come off a pitch after a good big win, just sitting there, everyone's battered and bruised, and you're just sitting there enjoying each other's company. There's no better feeling, I think. So we did that for an hour or two, and then went back to the hotel and had a good night down in Camps Bay, which is just around the corner from Cape Town where we're staying. So, no, it was a really good night. We got to celebrate it with our parents. There was lots of family down there, so it was good fun and well deserved for everyone after a good long weekend.
You can say that again. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Billy, thanks a million for taking our call. I hope you have a safe flight home and all the best with Olympic qualification.
Thanks very much for having me, guys.
Game on. Racing.
Well, welcome back to Game On. And while we enjoyed a wonderful weekend's racing at both Leopardstown and the Curragh here in Ireland over the weekend, racing did, of course, take place in Doncaster on Sunday afternoon, postponed from Saturday after the passing of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. But the oldest classic, the Sledge Ledger, did take place yesterday afternoon. It was won by Eldar Eldarov, trained by Red Gervarian, but more importantly, it was ridden by an Irishman, David Egan. Many congratulations and thanks for taking our call.
No, thank you very much, Ruby. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, David, a big day for you. I'm kind of laughing at the thought of it. Shane Lowry, I'm not sure where he is probably now in the world. The rugby team are travelling home from South Africa on a plane. But it sounds like nursing a hangover. You've just finished riding in Kempton.
Yeah, I rode a very low-grade horse in a 0-50 around Kempton. So, yeah, just on the way back now. But, no, it brings you back to reality, as this game does more often than not.
It most certainly does. David, yesterday was a big day for you. You've been in the UK a number of years. You're 23 years of age. But to win a classic on a horse trained by Roger Varian, who you've worked for quite a while, it's a big deal. It's a major milestone in your career.
Yeah, look, it was obviously Roger's second St. Ledger win. But to be a part of it, I've been with Roger, as you said, since I was 16. So I've been there 7 or 8 years now. And look, it's great to ride these horses, but there's such a big team behind the scenes, and I sort of grown up getting to know all of them, and to be able to do it with them was just unbelievable, really. I'm still a bit in awe, really.
You mentioned there your relationship with Rogers, and that's a great story. It must be really special, you know, coming from being an apprentice at 16 and now going on to win a classic. The race itself, though, David, I mean, you had a bit of a bump early in the straight and you lost some momentum. Were you worried at all, or were you just, this is mine?
Yeah, look, Shane, the race actually went pretty smoothly throughout. I was in the position I wanted to be, what I planned out in my head beforehand, following William Buick, who I thought was the horse to beat. He had Frankie on his inside on the second favourite, so throughout the race I was happy. But as regards to the bump early in the straight, I thought it would hinder me, but it actually almost helped me. And it's weird to say, because how well he travelled throughout the race, I thought I was struggling early in the straight, and it almost took that bump to almost wake him up. It's strange to see. It did break his momentum a little bit, but I felt came alive underneath me once he got a bump. He's just a horse. He's got a tremendous attitude, and he's a real fighter, that's for sure.
Yeah, he most certainly is. Shane, he won the Queen's Vase over a similar distance to go back at 1.6 again. David, what are the plans going forward with him? He looks like a real stayer. Could he be a horse maybe to take on Kyprius next year? Could he be a cup horse?
I think he is. I think his stamina is his biggest attribute. Obviously, you look back at Royal Ascot, he just got up on the line, and I think his class got him through that day, but on firm ground, I don't think was his optimum surface. I think he really relishes that ease in the ground as he got yesterday. And Kyprius is obviously a tremendous winner, and he's had such a great season, but I think staying distance is the way forward with him. And that's his strongest asset, so I would say that's the way the team would be looking going forward. He has got an entry in the Long Distance Cup on Champions Day, the end of October in Ascot. I'm so Joe Pickler might think about going there, but he's also got an entry in the Melbourne Cup, so he's got a lot of options, but we'll obviously wait to see how he is coming out of the race, and I'm sure the team will make a plan, but to have all them options there is great, to be the man on board, and very lucky.
David, you're no stranger to success around the world, even for somebody so young. A Saudi Cup on Mishreef, a Shima Classic. You also won a judgment on him. A trip to Melbourne would be quite exciting, though, wouldn't it?
It would. I think wherever Eldar Eldarov goes next would be very exciting. So whether it's Melbourne or Ascot or anywhere else for that matter, it's going to be a nice journey because, as you know, these stairs, they get into their element later on in their career. Rather, we see them sprinters that are 2 and 3 and 4, and so then the career as Kiprius and the likes of Arius, the longer they go, almost the better they get. So to think he might actually get better in time is quite astonishing. So it'd be exciting to see him next year.
David, you must be delighted after losing the best way of putting it, a job with Prince Faisal during the summer, the man who retained you, who you rode Mishreef for, to get on a horse like Eldar Eldarov and to get your career back up. It must give you great confidence. You dealt with it in an incredibly dignified way, but to go and ride big winners, put yourself back on the big stage, that must give you great satisfaction.
Yeah, absolutely. The big winners is what it's all about. As is riding day to day, as I said, I was at Kempton today, so it's not all about the big winners. It's trying to keep the little man happy and all your sort of small little connections, because they're the people that keep your name in the race card. But the big days are what all those jockeys want to be riding at, and then to ride the winner of those races is just the icing on the cake. Yes, owned by my sponsor, Shake Cat. New into the racing industry, but he's coming in on quite a big scale, spending quite a lot of money at the sales, and he's reaped the rewards of it so early in his sort of racing journey. So it's a fantastic dream as well.
It is fantastic for him. Well, it's wonderful to see you taking the opportunities you get. Well done. I enjoyed watching it. Safe trip home from Kempton. And I think, Shane, that is about all we have time for, is it? No mention of Champions Weekend. We'll get that tomorrow evening.
Absolutely. We will, Ruby. And we'll touch on European soccer. And we'll be chatting to the legendary Jason Sherlock tomorrow. So, yeah, that's unfortunately, that is all we have time for. Big thanks to Laura Lee Davis, our broadcast coordinator, Ronan Lawler, our producer. Lots more to come from myself and Ruby tomorrow. Lots more to come on 2FM because Tara Kumar is up next. So do stay tune. But from all of the Game On team for now, bye bye. RTE 2FM.